Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Broke Girl Society podcast. I'm your host, Christina. Thank you so much for being here. Today's episode is sponsored by the Better Institute, where people go to get better. They're a great group of people. Check them out at betterinstitute.com. So today we are here with step eight, and one of the best people I know is joining us again for this conversation.
Finally.
Finally. It's only been months,
a year and
months,
a half.
And months since we did step seven.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. It's Tara from the Ambitious Addicts podcast. Christina, thanks so much for getting together to do this. And thanks, everyone, for your patience as we gained the courage to do an episode like this one.
Yeah, I like how you said that, because this is a really, really tough step. It was one of the hardest for me. To have this conversation and just to let everybody know, we are working it from, how would you say we're working it? We're not like officially you and I working this step.
Not for this episode. It's so personal.
It really is. And you have to go to a level of vulnerability. And I think that's why it's taken so long just to even record this step, because even though we're not going to be sharing like our personal amends, we'll still talk about it and still kind of cover some things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think part of that delay, easy to subconsciously procrastinate something that you're scared of, right? So not scared to do the step, have worked the step multiple times, but the depth of listing out, which this step's actually not as hard as the next one is, but it is a lot of personal listing out of details of your own life. And I'll read the step. The step reads, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And this idea of like getting on a podcast and being like, well, I heard this person and this person and this person, like, not obviously not an easy thing to think about doing. So as we were talking about this episode, we came up with a better way to do it, which is just talk through our experience with the questions themselves and how we reflected. You might hear some personal stuff from us, but you know, there are certain things that we don't want out on the interwebs for the rest of all of the internet's existence.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's just one of those things too. It's having that, just that personal reflection, and is huge with this step. And it can be really, really hard to emotionally deal with in one setting, right? It's one of those things that even now, 2.5 years in, you know, I still think about instances and things that happened that I necessarily haven't reflected on, or even honestly probably hadn't remembered until, you know, as I get further away from that, the chaos of my gambling, like my brain starts to kind of heal a little bit. And then all of a sudden it's like out of nowhere, something will come in and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that that's something I did, or, you know, and it's just trying to wrap your head around processing it, but also how do you make amends on it? You know, that's the theme of step eight, is like, how do you process it and how do you fix it?
Yeah. And that's, I think, you know, similarly to step four, there is a lot of emotion to experience in this process, for sure, of the looking at who we harmed, right? And four, we're doing our moral and financial inventory, which might include the things we need to make amends for. But this one for sure is, you know, I mean, you're listing all the people you'd harmed. That's a, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. Should we jump into it?
Yeah. And for those listening along, we are working the steps out of A Woman's Way Through the 12 Steps. And we use the workbook. They have a book and a workbook, but to me, the workbook has been the most beneficial.
Yeah.
If you're having to choose which book to get, like the workbook for sure.
Yeah. And I think important also to say, like, I'm looking at this through two lenses, one, my gambling addiction, the other, my codependency, for the context of the conversation today. But, you know, we're not, Somehow, based on recent conversations you and I have said, I feel obligated to say we are not representatives of any 12-step program, but the 12-step programs are, the 12 steps themselves are a critical part of our personal recovery journeys.
Absolutely. Okay. What is the, I actually forgot my book. So Tara's going to walk us through this. I feel the need to say that in case they're like, why is Tara doing all the work?
We work a program of honesty. That is the honest truth. Okay. So a couple things that are pulled out in here is that step eight is helping us to learn to use two relationship tools. One is discernment and the other is willingness. And so discernment is about telling the difference between one thing and another. And in recovery, we're starting to sort out who we've harmed and who we haven't. Obviously, a list of 100 people isn't going to be helpful. And that is absolutely pointed out in the workbook. And so we're encouraged to start with just a few. And so we'll start with that discernment piece and then move on to the willingness.
Yeah, and it sounds good. And I think it's an important thing to mention is like, when you're working the steps, especially for the first time, is to understand that this is an ongoing process. And it's not like you're going to work this step, get everything out and be done and never like think about this again. Like, I think if you're working a solid recovery, you're doing these steps every day, you know, like not like 1 through 12 every day, but you're utilizing the steps in your life. Right. So it's like when we think about the amends piece, and even a year into recovery, 2 years into recovery, 7 years into recovery, you're still going to have behaviors that just pop up, right? We're human. So we're not, these steps aren't going to like erase us of all these behaviors and things that we've done. But what it has been helpful for me is to help me recognize and be more aware of my behaviors, about how they personally, reflect on me, but how it impacts others. And it's like, it changes the way that we work as humans, or for myself. So it's like, but that doesn't mean that certain behaviors, like my tendency to try and control things, is just automatically going to disappear because I work the steps. This is something that I continually have to think about, be aware of, process, reflect, all these things. So it's in the same way, it's like working through the steps about it. And so the point of that is to say that these aren't one and done. Like, to work a solid recovery, you're going to be working these steps in everything you do. And so it's like, even 2.5 years in, if a behavior shows up and I, acted in a certain way, my amends is more immediate. My amends is more like recognizable. It's like, oh man, I'm sorry. I had a conversation with my sister the other day and that control factor came up. And it's like immediately part of the way I was trying to control the situation. And it was like, I just recognized it and I stepped out of that. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, this is your life. You get to decide this. You get to do this. You get to, I know I'm trying to control it because I think I know better, but I don't, because it's not my life. Right. And it was like, and I was able to say that to her and apologize for the times that I've tried to step in and say, well, you really shouldn't do that. You should do this.
Right.
And that was huge to me to be able to do that.
Well, and that's, later on in the steps, right? Is the continuing to take personal inventory and made amends. I don't know. Gosh, I continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That's a little bit later. But in order to get that awareness and be able to see it so quickly, this work helps you kind of see patterns in your own behavior of like the ways that you have harmed others in the past. And to get ready for this work, doing step 6 and step 7 on your own character traits helps you see the character traits that might create harm to others. So there's some brilliance in the order of the way these steps happen. So we're, after step 6 and 7, we're kind of saying, okay, I want these defects of character removed. We all know how I feel about that word defect. So, but I do think there's absolutely some preparation that's occurring in all the earlier steps that get us ready for this kind of work at looking at how we've harmed others, and being able to be discerning and being able to say, was that me? Was that my character? Was that the nature of my character? And be discerning about whether or not we created harm, or if we are in a different character trait, such as self-loathing, where we're trying to take the blame for something that was completely out of our control and we actually didn't make anything happen. We didn't create the harm. So I'm trying to think of a good example for something like that. Like, we might have a lot of guilt about an accident that was a no-fault accident. If we talk about like a car crash, like if you do this kind of work and you think there's an amends to be made, and then you realize like, wait, you're using discernment. Like, wait a minute. I had, you know, I had no control over the weather. I had no control, whatever, you know, there might've been an external force that was actually the thing that created the harm, and it wasn't you. So I will point out that of all the people we've harmed, whether in our addiction or not, we belong on this list.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because something like that self-loathing, we owe an amends to ourselves for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the workbook, it's asking you to just start small and like list out, you know, a few people that you've harmed, and especially those that were harmed as a result of your addiction. And, you know, I think about that from a codependency lens, it's a bit harder to get at, like, how is I hurting other people with my codependency, until you realize, Christina, as you were just saying, how much you're trying to control other people's lives. And then suddenly it's like,
Yeah.
Yeah. So that starting small, I think is a really helpful guidance. And there's some questions that help you really uncover, you know, the who you want to include in that initial list.
I think for me, I started with just like the, you know, the immediate people in my life. I think for me, that's where I had to start, like, kind of, and then I built out from there. And I remember when you and I were having this conversation, and I remember an incident where I was talking with my mom, and I was kind of talking about the step work, and she had brought up my brother-in-law. She was like, well, you know, you harmed him too. And
how
my heart, though, once she kind of like laid it out, and I was like, well, I don't understand how he was kind of like, I didn't do anything to him. And then she was like, but you hurt your sister.
Right.
And he loves your sister. And, you know, it hurt him to see her hurt. And I was just like, mind blown. Right. Like, and then it was just like kind of really opened my eyes to the ripple effect.
Yeah, in the bad way, right?
In the bad way. Right. You know, because I talk a lot about the ripple effect and how
we do.
You know, I've talked about how our addiction ripples out, and I talked about how our recovery ripples out. And for me, I'd much rather my recovery life ripple out than the harm of my addiction life. And so it's like we caused all this ripple with addiction, you know, and now I'm seeing it kind of in 3D a little bit. But then I look at my recovery and how that's kind of rippling over a lot of that harm, and it's healing a lot of that harm. And I feel like, you know, now my relationship with both of them is so much better, and they're really important people to me. And so when I was really kind of starting to talk about this and look at this, it was really understanding who was impacted by my gambling harm and kind of building that circle up, and like, okay, this person was directly because I borrowed money and didn't pay them back. This person is indirectly, but directly because they're connected to this person, or they're connected to this, and then kind of building it outwards. And that's kind of what helped me kind of recognize, not necessarily the importance, right? Because it was all important to me to recognize the harm and to figure out ways to amend it. But it was just kind of like, what can I tackle right now?
Now.
And what will kind of pro- progressively be tackled through this work. And
right.
that made it a little less overwhelming for me.
Yeah. And that's that part around the willingness, right? Like that, that's kind of that next thing is you get the list going and then you're doing some self-inquiry around your willingness. And in my episode aptly titled The Ripple Effect from a long time ago, you know, I talk about those ripples, but how big they've gotten for me as I think about them now. When I was first working step eight, you know, I was thinking about me. I was thinking about Christina, much like you, the people close to me. And then that next layer ripple, you know, in gambling recovery, there's lots of institutional harm. If you had debt, if you didn't pay your bills on time, if you, you know, maybe stole from a store, that also we've got to be willing to make an amends for, become willing to make an amends for. But now that I'm, you know, even further out, I think about the bigger amends of like me not being the best version of myself and how that impacted my community, my engagement. I'm a U.S. citizen, my engagement in our democracy and care for the nation as a whole, the world as a whole. Like, talk about the ripple, you know, going way out. And I've become more interested in how do I be, you know, the cliche phrase, the change that I want to see in the world, right? I was so self-focused, self-centered, so panicked about how I was going to pay the next thing or get the next bet placed. I didn't think about any of that other than surface level discussion on theory, idea, opinion, and debate, but I wasn't an engaged citizen. And so that's something I'm working to make amends for now by becoming an engaged citizen. Anyhow, yeah. Yeah, the ripples though, right? Like we're not ready to look at that big, big picture stuff as we first approach these steps, but it's all worth consideration and discernment around for sure.
Yeah, and I think too, as you progress in your own recovery and you progress in your step work and your healing and your growth, it makes looking at those things a lot, I don't want to say easier because I don't think it's ever easier when we're looking at harm that we've caused, but it makes it where we can look at it, see it for what it is, and look at how we can, if we can fix it and how we can fix it. And it doesn't feel as like heavy, I think, you know, as we start to understand the whys and hows and all these things, you know, it kind of gives you a bigger perspective of the whole situation. And yeah. So it's just kind of understanding what is in our control to fix and what is not.
Yeah, for sure. And then in the guidance and the workbook, it asks us to reflect on a handful of things in regards to the relationships that we've selected. And one is, you know, who is it or what is it? Maybe it is an institution, your responsibility, and then your feelings and your intentions. And that's really getting at your intentions behind making the amends, or maybe if the harm was a lie, you know, or deception of some sort, you know, telling the truth. And it is a good way to really understand that you might have character traits that are showing up here, even as you list these things out in the why you want to make amends. And in particular with codependency, a lot of the amends I wanted to make was because I wanted the person to like me, right? Which is just like, oh, hi, you know, this person to be mad at me. So that's why I want to make the amends. Like, that's probably not the right intention. So I have some additional work to do on that before going to make the amends.
I would think amends and codependency looks a lot like, you know, recognizing the people pleasing. And I think for me, like amends and codependency would be, I think it would almost have to be a living amends. It would have to be an amends that's just like, okay, I'm going to commit to not repeating these behaviors for the sake of our relationship. And it's kind of understanding that if the living amends or the way that I need to live now to be healthy, it doesn't necessarily fit in that relationship anymore. Or those boundaries cause issues. It's just like understanding that that's just how it needs to progress, right?
Yeah. And there still needs to be that acknowledgement of the harm, I think. And,
for sure.
Once I can get to that place where I'm clean on whether or not I am fully willing and that I'm in a clean place around my motivation behind the amends, once I can clearly see that my motivation behind the amends is to acknowledge the harm and not for me to receive something back, that it's not about me. And I'm not ready to do that with all of them, but once I am, then I know I'm safe to proceed with figuring out how to do it.
And I think a big part too about preparing for the amends phase is preparing for the consequences of the amends phase. And, you know, it's really kind of just preparing, like if you need to let's say come clean about a lie, and it's just preparing for that. You have no control over the reaction. You have no control over how that's going to go down, being prepared to, like, maybe they walk away or maybe they embrace you, but the unknown of it all and having to be okay with however it lands.
Yeah. I have a sister in recovery who, actually there's a couple people who've said this now, who when they look at this willingness part, and let me jump over to what they say about willingness. In step 9, you'll decide what you can do to make amends to these people. For now, just think about barriers. What stands in the way of your making amends to each person you've named, and what might keep you from being willing to make amends? So the guidance I've received from others with some wisdom who are my brothers and sisters in recovery is to kind of column that out. Like, I'm willing to make this amends. I'm not really willing to make this amends. And then a hell no column. And as you get through the ones where you're like, yes, I'm ready to do this one, I'm going to make that amends, you'll notice a shift. The more amends you're making, your willingness shifts, and the things that are in the maybe column kind of move over to the yes column, and the things that are in the hell no column start to become maybes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's true. I think when I think back on my own, like, that's very true. I mean, there's still some like hell no's. I mean, there's still a few of those. And I'm not sure that I'll ever get to a place where I can move those even over to maybe, but, and, you know, that's just still work I've got to do. I've got to just constantly remember that that's there, and that, you know, just reassess myself in that situation and see where I'm at. So I never say never, I guess,
right.
In recovery, you should never say never, except for never going to like do. God willing, never yes. gamble again, but, yes. Or higher power willing, never, yes. never gamble universe. Again. But, you know, it's one of those things where if you just say, I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to fix this. I'm never going to get better. I'm never going to do this. You know, then that just changes your whole mindset to, yeah. And you're probably going to struggle when you have this mindset of like, I'm never going to. So
I'm never, I can't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, I won't. Yeah. I'm not.
It's like, just for me, it's changing that vocabulary to just not right now,
which takes
not
time.
Right now.
Yeah. And it takes time.
Yep.
Yeah.
What's our next prompt?
Yeah. The next prompt was on that willingness, which I think, so I'll just repeat the things it's suggesting, and the willingness, some examples that might keep you from being willing to make amends are listed here. And these are, you know, these are pretty real. You know, I'm afraid she'll lose respect of me. I'm afraid they'll get angry and yell. I don't have the money. If we're talking about institutional amends, I think I just need to live with the fact that this relationship is over.
Okay.
I need to move on. So those are some examples of things that might be barriers, and you're really listing out the person and then what might be a barrier to make the amends, which is essentially a brain dump.
Yeah.
Right, of your thoughts about it. And then we're encouraged as we go through this process to absolutely think through self-care and be taking care of ourselves through this. So, you know, really thinking about as I go through this process of examining the list of people I've harmed and whether or not I'm willing to make an amends to them, it's really important to process and experience the emotions that you're experiencing, but have a plan for how you're going to get that out of you or how you're going to handle those emotions. And so it's, you know, asking us to think ahead of time a little bit about what am I going to do with my feelings? Am I going to dance? Am I going to go for a walk? Am I going to run? And really, really encouraging you to think proactively about self-care as you reflect about amends, which is really cool. And then also proactively planning for like, how's this going to feel when you're done? So what are you going to gain from working on step 8 that you can be grateful for kind of ahead of time?
Oh yeah. I like that thought too. Like let's think about how it's going to feel once we do really reflect on these emotions. And I want to say, like, if you're working the steps on your own, and you don't have a sponsor or a mentor or a group, you know, just if you can find somebody that is super close to you, who knows what you're going through. It can even be a therapist to really talk through the emotions that's going on, because the point of these step work is to really get to the core of us, to get to the core of our behaviors, to get to the core of just where we want to be in life. Right. And you know, to work these steps is what gets us to that part, but we can't do it alone. I know if you're struggling, that's I'm trying to say is you can't do it alone. You've got to have somebody else to just help you navigate, even if it's to push you for self-care, to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. But this step in particular is extremely hard to work on your own. And I know that finding sponsors are sometimes really hard. Especially these days, it just feels like there's not enough sponsors for the people looking, for sponsorship. And so like, if you're working them and you're listening to this, or I just really encourage you to either reach out to a group, a therapist, somebody that's close to you, just to make sure that you're checking in with your mental health, navigating this.
Yeah. And I'd add to that, in particular, in a gambling recovery program, it seems even harder to find sponsorship. And so there are some resources, if therapy or a priest or a best friend or is not feeling safe to you and you want to have like an anonymous experience, that's possible through some of the peer support mental health services all around the country. If you just Googled addiction peer support, go broad and do addiction peer support. It doesn't matter what kind of addiction you have. If you go through one of the state peer support resources or SAMHSA, they do have resources now with hotlines that are intended to be for peer support specifically. So if you're coming up short on the who, don't hesitate to use a resource like that, where you can remain fairly anonymous.
Yeah. And most states have a peer support recovery specialist. Whether or not they're going to be gambling specific.
Probably not.
That's not a huge resource. I know there's a lot of states that.
There's a couple states that have that.
That have that. Oklahoma is not a state that has that yet, but they do have peer support for other addictions. So yeah, and there's a connection, right, between addictions. It's like it may not be a specific connection, but the same behaviors, the same, you know, guilt, shame, thought patterns, you know, it's all really similar across the board when it comes to addiction. And so even connecting on that kind of level is extremely beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about that addict to addict, you know, Like that there's, I know for me anyway, I have way less fear of judgment when I'm talking to somebody else who's experienced addiction personally.
Yeah, and if you're talking with a therapist or somebody, it's just really important to get to that honesty piece. Not only honesty with ourselves, but honesty with like the therapist. I've talked to so many people who are like, I couldn't even tell my therapist this. And I'm like,
I'm giggling for a reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like, I don't know how many times I was in therapy and wasn't completely honest or talking to my doctor and
but
not
like,
being
why
honest.
is that? You know,
I don't
like,
know.
I mean, I know why, but it's like this
the shame.
self-protection.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, we're trying to, you know, like we're there to get the help and then we're lying to them about what we need help with. I totally did that with my, before I found recovery from gambling. I did go to therapy and I explained my gambling behavior and like, I have a budget and I this and that, you know, did I elaborate and say I blow through my budget all the time or I've driven home to get more money after I burned through what I gave myself as a gambling allowance. Well,
or
I
my
didn't.
checking accounts in the negative
Negative.
and
Yeah. Or
bouncing checks and
spent my
like,
whole
yeah.
paycheck. No, I didn't tell her any of that. I was like, yeah, I like to gamble. I spend this much a month. I have a budget, you know, like. And she didn't dig. She wasn't gambling certified, so she didn't necessarily know how to go deeper. But oh, I totally lied.
Yeah.
Totally lied.
It's like, that's why I say it's so important to connect with the right therapist, because I've gotten to know a lot of therapists through the work that I do in this community, and they honestly want to help you. But the best way that they can help you is for you to be honest. And I promise you, they're not going home at night and telling everybody about what you told them. Like, they really just aren't. Like, and what's interesting to me is I've always looked at like therapists as like not people. I don't know, like doctors or people like that. I'm just like, they're just not the same kind of people. You know what I mean? And it's just like, as I've gotten to know them, it's like, yeah, they really
are. Yes, they are.
They
They're
really
also
are.
Human. They really are also human beings.
Yeah. And they really want to help. And especially if they're like addiction specialized, and especially if they're gambling addiction, like they purposely went for this field.
Yeah. And
So,
for many of them, it's also deeply personal because of a lived experience they've had in their life that was touched by someone
And
else's
so it
addiction.
Becomes this thing for them. And so to help you just helps them deal with that. And I think a lot of it is because you don't necessarily get to know their personal story. And yet they're asking you to like share everything on such a vulnerable, deep level. And you're like, but I don't even know who you're married to. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those kinds of things. But to me, that actually is better because I can just like brain dump and then be like, oh, I feel better. And then just like, you know, and then they have to process it. And but they have the tools and resources for their end to process and work through. And, you know, it's this thing that if you really connect with a great therapist, the work that you can do is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, what's great about it too is that they don't have any vested interest in your decisions aside from, of course, like patient care, right? But they could care less if you leave your husband or if you, you know, decide you're in debt by X number. They're not affected. That's probably, they're not directly affected by the decisions you make in your life, or unless you decide to quit therapy, right? Do they care? Probably. But they're not affected. So it's easy for them to come from that neutral place and not an opinionated place because they're trying to control you in some way, right? It's much easier for them to come from a neutral place that's also goal-oriented of like healing you, helping you heal, helping you have coping mechanisms.
And helping you navigate those really heavy transitions, you know, that sometimes recovery makes us face. For me, it was a really heavy toll, you know, and on the decisions I had to make. And I knew that if I wanted to stay in recovery, I had to make some really, really hard choices. And, you know, having a therapist there, having my sponsor there, having like all these people there to help me navigate, like it was torturous, but I knew that I wasn't navigating it alone. And so, and I think coming back to the steps, it's like, can you work them on your own? Yes. But it's just better if you have somebody help navigate.
Yeah. All right. So as we wrap the discussion here on step eight, I've got a beautiful little message that's in this workbook
I like it.
that I'd love to read. Does that sound like a good way to close this one?
Sounds fantastic.
Okay. Today, because I love myself enough, I put my best self forward by being honest with myself, with what's really going on with me. To thine own self be true. I try to do this in all my relationships. When I compromise, it's almost like a soft prostitution. There's something I'm trying to get, and that's a form of manipulation. What I need to do is be direct and honest about what's going on with me and let other people deal with it as they choose.
Oh, I like it. Remember, I opened this up like when we jumped on, I was like, I just saw this quote about like how we just have to be honest and direct and
yeah.
let other people navigate that for themselves. And it's like something that I've struggled with, and this ties into the people pleasing, is like trying to control that reaction by not being maybe as direct or not being as honest. And then it's yeah. like, not only do I cause them additional harm, I cause myself harm.
Yep.
Because I set and dwell on that. This is a pattern with me, and I know that you can attest to this, is I will set in my guilt forever.
Yes.
I say that just as you drink your coffee, because I know that you are going to be like, yes, you do. You set yes. in it way too long, because I do.
Yeah. And it's not a way too long thing, right? It's just you're building up your ability to recognize that that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're doing it for as long as you do. The more you see what you're doing, the more you're like, oh, wait, this is guilt. The faster that happens.
You can kind of recognize it.
Just practice. Yeah.
Still never easy, especially when you know that you're going to hurt somebody by how you feel. I don't think that's ever going to be a comfortable or easy situation for me.
Do we want it to be, though?
I don't
like,
know.
Do we actually want to be comfortable with the fact that we know someone might be hurt by what we do? Like, I know someone might be hurt by what I do, but I also know at the same time I'm doing what's best for me. And it's not, I'm not intending to hurt them, but if I know them really well, I often might know the types of things that hurt them. But if I'm shape-shifting, doing the eggshell walking to make sure they're not hurt, then who's hurt? Me. And ultimately them, because they're getting a fake version of me, which actually isn't helpful. Like if I know something might hurt someone, I want to feel a little bit guilty about that, because it's not my intent to hurt them in that moment. It might be my intent to be true to myself.
Yeah. And again, that all comes back around to our intention, right? Yeah. Like, yep. I don't think even in addiction, it was ever our intention to cause the harm that we caused.
No.
And I think that's the important part of recognizing in recovery the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just like, it wasn't my intention to cause harm, but I did. Now I know better and I need to do better. And, you know, kind of going with that motto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to practice this new thing. Oh, we said we're going to close it out. Let's close it out.
Yeah, because we could just like talk all day about
I know.
This. This one's a pretty heavy step. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't maybe try and do something later on to kind of reconnect with step eight again. But I appreciate everybody for listening, and I appreciate Tara for coming on and having this conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Christine. I love doing these step work episodes with you. I'm glad we got back to it.
Yep. All right.